behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to the show. I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben. We are here, as always, with our super producer, Noel Vroom Brown.
Snake.
Noel the Snake. That's way better.
Snake. Yeah. It's a name that will come up later. Or Mr. Speed. How about that?
Noel, Mr. Speed Brown.
No, we can't take... Can we take nicknames from legends and get and apply them to Noel? I think we can, but...
Sure.
I don't know. It feels like we're robbing them of something. Maybe we need to come up with something brand new for Noel during this episode that's fitting based on the topic. So
that's a great
idea. Let's think about it as we go through.
Uh-huh.
And see if we remember to do this along the way.
Yeah. And send your suggestions to us if you think of one as well.
Yeah. All right. So here's what we're doing, Ben. We're going to cover funny car racing, but we have in the past, and I had a list here somewhere, but my notes are scattered all over the place today. I've got a lot of stuff to talk about. As usual, right? Mm-hmm. But I have a lot of stuff to talk about, and I know we've covered NHRA, we've covered drag racing, we've covered Top Fuel Dragsters, we've covered a lot of kind of surrounding series and drag racing, but we never have talked about specifically funny cars, and that's what we're going to do today.
And this is one of those topics that when we first came upon it, we both thought, we've already done that.
Oh, we had to have already done that, because I think that we've talked about funny car racing in so many episodes and just little bits and pieces, you know, sidebars here and there or nuts and bolts or something like that, where it feels like we've covered the whole topic, but we are far from covering the whole topic on this.
Right. So let's start now. Let's rectify this. So in drag racing, there are several classes of vehicle, right? Of racing classes in the U.S. Those are things like Pro Stock, Pro Modified, Top Fuel, Pro Stock Bike, and then there's Funny Car.
Yeah, well, in addition to that, I think, I don't have the note here, but there's like 200 other classes of
drag racing, right?
So there's a lot, and a lot of them come into this, like the sportsman type, under that umbrella, I suppose.
Yeah.
With different engine classifications, different modifications that are allowed and all that, so bracket racing and all that. So a lot of different groups, but Funny Cars, these are one of the pro... series, of course, and the ones that we're talking about specifically are the nitromethane burning funny cars, the Top Fuel funny cars. There's another group of funny cars called Top Alcohol, and Top Alcohol is just what it is. I mean, it's burning alcohol versus the nitromethane that we're talking about for funny cars, and we'll describe the fuels a little bit later. But just so we get that out there, that you know, this is just Top Fuel funny cars with some tangents along the way. I'm sure we'll intersperse, but
well, it's us.
The very first funny car race, Ben, is documented as happening in 1965, January of 1965 in Scottsdale, Arizona. And that was, the NHRA season opener. And that was held, the Winter Nationals at a place called the Beeline Dragway. So here's what happens, Ben. At this 1965, Winter Nationals, Chrysler Corporation, because the major manufacturers are involved in drag racing, of course. Chrysler Corporation starts unloading these really unusual, never-before-seen vehicles. You know, that they're so radically different from the cars that people are currently drag racing. You know, like because they were mostly stock cars. They had stock wheelbase. If they had four doors, they had four doors or two doors or whatever. Mm-hmm. They looked pretty much like the cars that were on the road at that time. Of course, enormous horsepower and different wheels and suspension, all that, but. They basically look the same as the ones you could buy from the dealership. Well, these were so unusual. These are Dodges and Plymouth, by the way, that we're talking about. And they had these dramatically altered wheelbases, and the rear axle was moved forward as far as about 15 inches. So imagine the overhang of those already enormous 1960s vehicles.
Yeah.
It being extended by another 15 inches when those rear wheels are brought forward, the whole rear axle. And then the front wheels were pushed forward again by about 10 inches. So it really alters the way the whole vehicle looks. It has kind of just a strange look to it. There's like a long overhang in the back. What they were doing was they were trying to balance the weight in a different way that allowed the rear wheels to make better contact all the way down the drag strip. And this distribution of weight was achieved by moving axles forward, you know, again, 15 inches in the back, mm-hmm. 10 inches in the front. But the other racers were looking at these guys like they're crazy. They had no idea what they're doing. And then when they get on the track, of course, they find out that they're just blowing the doors off everybody else because of this superior weight balance.
Yeah.
And this becomes a different group of vehicles. And is it the AFX grouping that they then put them in, because it's a altered wheelbase experimental vehicle, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what it counts as.
Yes. And of course, these early cars all ran on, you know, the Chrysler engines at the time. They were 426 Hemi powered cars. You know, the teams that you would guess were in the series at the time, you know, running these would be like the Ram Chargers and Sox and Martin. And, I think the Golden Commandos, you know, they had colorful names for the teams and everything, but you know, these are professional racers from the factory division. And the other thing was, it's not just the altered wheelbase that made these crazy, and you know, the extreme horsepower of these things, because the 426 Hemi, by the way, becomes the engine that is the basis for just about every funny car out there through the rest of the decades. And that's a lot of people don't know that. And maybe we've mentioned it on Car Stuff, but most drag racers, even if you're in a Chevrolet product or in a Ford product, you're running a Hemi engine.
Yeah.
A Chrysler-based Hemi engine. So it's not just the design of the chamber. The other thing was that they had a lightweight body because they were acid dipped bodies. We've heard of that trick before, right? Was it Smokey Yunick, I think?
I think it was a Yunick original,
yeah,
that one.
I think so. He dipped that, it was a Camaro, I believe, that he had acid dipped, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would acid dip the bodies so that it would lightweight the bodies. They used fiberglass front fenders, doors, dash, hood, deck lids, and they used also lightweight materials in the place of glass. So they replaced the glass with plastic.
Mm-hmm.
These guys were just—they were far and away ahead of everybody else in the field in 1965 with these cars that they called funny cars, and they didn't call them that at the time. Again, I said it was AFX series, that altered wheelbase thing.
Right, right.
No one quite knew what to call them, but this is the truth—the origin of the name history, and it's one of those things that has just over the decades just kind of stuck, I think. They truly did just name them funny cars because they look funny. There wasn't any other reason for it. It's not like an acronym for anything like that.
Right.
They just said, those cars look funny. They look unusual. You know, it could have just as well been unusual cars.
Now, no one knows the exact origin or etymology or the specific person who named that. They just came to be known as that because when you would say funny car, everyone knew what car you were referring to.
Exactly. Yeah. The name was what they called them initially, and it just kind of stuck over the decades, and it's been passed down that way. And that's what we've officially named them that now. And I guess this is like just the kind of generalities, you know, the stuff that kind of ties them all together, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all have to have a 500 cubic inch engine, and most of them use, the basis again, as I mentioned, the aluminum Chrysler Hemi 426 as their main engine. They call that the elephant engine, or they did call that the elephant engine at the time.
Yeah, from 64 to 71.
And it's just exactly why you would guess. The elephant engine is just because of its enormous size. It was physically the largest engine you could get at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's still the case anymore or not, but the 426 Hemi was an enormous engine in physical size.
And we should say that nowadays the most popular design for funny car engines is still at its most varying, it's still loosely based on that, on the 426.
On the Chrysler design.
Yeah.
So, you know, regardless of, you know, what manufacturer you're racing for, they all are they're supercharged, they're fuel injected, they're nitromethane burning. They run approximately, this is all for funny cars currently, they run approximately 4.6 seconds, around the 4 second range. I mean, you know, they give or take a little bit, at a speed of about 330 miles per hour. So that's an incredibly fast. It's ridiculously
crazy.
Fast. It looks like the footage is sped up when you watch these run. I mean, really.
Yeah.
The way that they differ from the top fuel dragsters. Now, you would think that it'd be similar in a lot of ways, and they are in some ways. They basically have the same engine as the dragsters do. They have this different body, and the dragsters are, of course, you know, the ones that we're talking about are the 25 foot long open engine at the back behind the driver,
right.
Wing. You know, enormous slicks, that type of design. These are essentially the same engine, only underneath an aerodynamic shell, fiberglass shell or carbon fiber shell.
Which makes a huge difference.
It does make a huge difference. And I bet a lot of people are curious about the horsepower, too. You would have to be, and the torque.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so there's a huge range in the horsepower, or the reported horsepower of these things. And I don't know if it's that they can't really get them on a dyno and find out exactly what they're doing because they blow everything out,
right,
or what the reason is. But they report anywhere from, you know, the high 6,000s up to about 9,000. But the official number that they kind of like to go with, just a rough guess for every team, is right around 8,000 horsepower in these funny cars. Now, that's combined with 7,000 pound-feet of torque.
That's not 800.
No, 8,000 horsepower and 7,000 pound-feet of torque. Now, we'll talk about some fun facts that the NHRA has provided us with for funny cars later on. They'll give you some more astounding numbers, some more water cooler type talk, right?
Right.
Yeah, that you can amaze your friends with.
Some of those little bits of cocktail trivia.
Yeah, like how much fuel do they use during a run, and how often do they have to be rebuilt, and, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, G-force numbers, things like that. Okay, let's see. There's a few other things that we need to talk about the vehicles themselves before we really get into much else about this.
Sure.
And this really took me by surprise. These cars do not have a transmission, or a standard transmission, like a normal transmission, right, like you might think of. What they do have is they have this this multi-stage clutch assembly that's activated by timers. And this is, I find this really perplexing that they could have a vehicle like this with no transmission. The driver really can't physically control what gear what gear he or she is in at that point. So, and same thing with Top Fuel dragsters. I mean, the exact same way. This assembly, instead of being able to shift into, you know, first, second, third, or gravity, or even I think the top alcohol dragsters, you have like three gears that you select from, but you have to manually pull those gears at the right time in order to shift right. This is a time device that strictly allows them to make a run with just their foot on the fuel.
It's like a mechanical system that is preset before each run based on the calculations of the racing team, and the surface of the track is one of the biggest factors, right?
Sure. Yes. They can adjust it. They've got some amount of adjustment to this thing, but basically what it comes down to, I believe, is speed. When it reaches this mile per hour, this RPM,
right,
that's when we shift into this gear. And the one exception to this whole thing is there's still a reverse. So they do have control over this. You'll notice that right away when you see them do a burnout.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they back up. That's how they get back to the starting line to stage up to get ready. But, so they do have a reverse, and it's just kind of a bolt on. It seems like an afterthought thing, but even back when they had the transmissions, you know, with the gears that they had to select as they went down the track, reverse was still almost an afterthought in that it was just bolted to the back of the assembly. So again, no real transmission to speak of other than outside of the top alcohol dragsters. I believe those still have three gears that they have to select. Man, where do we go from here? Cause there's so many other things to talk about.
Well, what we could also talk about at this point that's pretty important is some of the safety issues.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So when you watch a drag race, one thing you will see is that, you know, safety is key here because these things are beasts on a track. One of the more obvious things you'll see are the parachutes, right? They come out at the end of the race, which as a kid, I thought was one of the coolest things.
Oh, of course. Well, the Batmobile had parachutes.
Right. That's, see, you get it.
Yeah.
We would have been friends as kids. But, you know, also there are roll cages, there are fire extinguishers, and there's one big change to funny car racing that's a little tragic, but we should talk about it. And that change occurred after 2008 on June 21st.
Yeah, that's the Scott Coletta wreck.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was a fatal crash, and, boy, it's horrific. You can watch it online. You can see, because of course, cameras are running. I don't know if it was a practice run or if it was a, you know, an actual heat race. I don't remember exactly the details surrounding it, but this is essentially the race that, afterwards they shortened the distance that they run. That certain classes, you know, pro stock and sportsman classes, would race, the full length still, but the top
fuel.
Which is
like, 1320 feet.
Yeah, the 1320. So that's a true quarter mile. The other classes, the pro classes, like the top fuel dragsters and the top fuel funny cars and, you know, the top alcohol funny cars, those would all, and sport bikes even, would run races that were shortened to 1,000 feet. And then they would also, institute different safety measures. Like they would, have padded retaining walls at the end of the track and sand traps. And they also would replace the polymer nets that were held up with concrete posts at the end. I mean, it's stuff that, you know, you would think that would make common sense. That would just be common sense that you wouldn't have a big concrete post at the end of the run, you know, anywhere down there at all.
Right.
However, that wasn't really thought of. And I believe Scott Coletta hit a wall. I mean, it was a horrific accident. It really was.
So he was in the final round of qualifying for the Lucas Oil Super Nationals, NHRA Super Nationals. He was traveling about 300 miles per hour when the engine exploded near the finish line. The parachutes were damaged, so they didn't slow the vehicle. And, unfortunately, what they see is that although he did apply mechanical braking and tried to maintain steering control, across the shutdown portion of the track, the clutch system was locked and was maintaining engine power to the rear wheels. So, it was because it was still providing that power, it hit the end of the paved track, went through a sand trap about 125 miles. Then it went over the concrete retaining wall.
Yeah. It really, really tremendous impact. I mean, it's a huge impact, a ball of flame, awful wreck. And the thing is, you know, you look at this and you're thinking like, why is he going full speed into the wall? I mean, clearly something's gone wrong mid track, but, you can tell exactly when it happens and what happens, but you didn't know what was happening inside. And to hear that he was applying mechanical brakes, that was another thing that was shocking to me, is that if these things don't even have a clutch, you know, they don't have a gearbox that you can select from. What good is a tiny little mechanical brake on the front wheel of these things going to do? I mean, I don't care how big these disc brakes are; they're not going to stop an 8,000 horsepower car. They're not going to overpower that gas. So if the engine is locked on or the clutch assembly is locked up and it's applying full force, there's no way those mechanical brakes are going to hold. And we saw that in Scott Coletta wreck.
That's a good point. As a result of this fatal crash, the industry started working to somehow fix the issue of engine backfire, which is one of the big reasons behind those explosions.
Yeah, that was exactly right. That's why a lot of these nitro burning cars end up with a fire situation happening. So, you know, some good came out of this, of course, you know, as usually does, you know, but there has to be something always tragic that happens in racing, it seems, before a change is made. I mean, look at, like Jackie Stewart fighting for Formula One safety back in the 1960s and, you know, other groups along the way that have seen something wrong and said, hey, we got to fix this. Like, you know, IndyCar and kart car suspensions breaking off and wheels flying, you know, up into the crowd or, you know, back at other drivers. All that was handled later with tethers, but only after several really horrific accidents.
Or the Le Mans disaster in 55.
Exactly right. Yeah. Stuff like that happens all the time. And it does provide, a means for them to then investigate into probe into the safety of whatever the situation may be and correct it. But it's just a shame that always seems to have to happen ahead of time. I know they try to be preemptive about stuff and, you know, they're really safe about a lot of things, but until that one unusual oddball situation happens, they don't think of every single thing that can happen or can go wrong. And that's what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like there were a lot of different things, but a lot of these, devices, like that backfire device, I think was made, a mandatory safety requirement in 2009. So not long after this incident happened.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of, again, you know, there's going to be a lot of, I guess maybe old timers or, you know, people that say that, you know, that they don't really like having that sensor in place, you know, this mandatory sensor that, you know, shuts down the fuel pump and deploys the parachutes immediately because, they can misread the situation. Maybe it wasn't going to happen that way, but they fired anyway. So, you know, they lost that round because, you know, an early shutdown and deployment of the chutes. But I think the ones that, you know, truly want it for the safety of the drivers and the fans and the track workers and everybody else around that facility, I think that far outweighs the ones that are against this type of thing.
That's true. That's true. And these safety innovations, another important thing that we talk about in previous racing episodes is that a lot of the safety innovations that are in your car or your truck or your bike right now come directly from racing. So what we're seeing is that racing, because it is on the bleeding edge of engineering and the possibilities you can find, this ultimately does have a benefit to automobiles and vehicles in general overall.
Yeah, sure. I mean, these will be extrapolated to the cars that you and I can buy at the dealership. That's what you're trying to say.
Eventually.
Right? Yeah, eventually. And in some form, not exactly. It's not going to shut down the fuel and deploy the chutes on your road car by any means. Oh man, I wish we had parachutes.
That would be so cool.
It really would, wouldn't it?
I mean, we could probably mod one up, but it would be tough to mod one up that would do something effectively.
Yeah,
you know
true.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we could have a fake little parachute pop out, but to have it pop out with enough force and be large enough and be the right material, I don't know.
I feel like you could go to a racing supply store and just simply rig one of these up to your what have you got now? What's your car now?
I've got the Escape.
The Escape. That's right. The Escape Hybrid. Yeah, you could rig up a parachute system to your Escape Hybrid and really raise some eyebrows out on the freeway.
Maybe, yeah.
Like, man, that guy must have been going so fast.
Eyebrows of law enforcement, perhaps.
Well, maybe. That's a,
that's how I find out that there's a law against having a parachute on your car on the interstate.
Yeah, that's right. All right. So, you know, we mentioned fuel a few times, and I guess we should probably mention this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the fuel systems are really key to why these engines can create so much power. And during a single run, I think we'll talk about this a little bit later, but during a single run, you know, the burn, the starting the engine, the burnout, backing up, you know, that they have to do in reverse gear, the staging, the quarter, and then the actual quarter mile run, or not quite quarter mile, but less. The cars can burn as much as 15 gallons of fuel. That's 57 liters of fuel that can be burned in that short amount of time. So it's a huge amount of fuel. And the fuel mixture is typically 85 to 90% nitromethane with about 10 to 15% methanol mixed in. So it's not 100% nitromethane. It's got some methanol mixed in. Now, methanol is pure methyl alcohol that's used as a fuel. Now, in top alcohol dragsters, that's what they use. They use primarily methanol. I don't know if there's any nitromethane in there at all. I think it's all alcohol, or methanol rather. The nitromethane burning cars, the nitro cars as they're called, have that mix that I just talked about. And it's made specifically as a fuel for drag racing. And it's the result of a chemical reaction between nitric acid and propane. And of course, you know, these top fuel dragsters that we mentioned and the funny cars that we're talking about today both use nitromethane, or that blend of nitromethane that we mentioned. And I think that, you know, they, The sanctioning bodies, I think they mess around with that mixture just a little bit based on, you know, the altitude. You're gonna have different fuel that you run in Denver versus what you're gonna use in Pomona. They kind of play around with that a little bit to get the optimum, the correct burn, I guess, on that type of fuel.
Yeah, this is a highly calculated sport for the beginning, right? So much of the preparation, months and months, or even a year, goes down to just a couple minutes.
Well, yeah, right. Start to finish. I mean, from when you start the vehicle until when you shut the vehicle down, it's really just a couple of minutes at most. And, you know, some of the facts and figures that we'll talk about in a little while are pretty interesting with the consumption of fuel and tires and all that stuff and the speeds and the G forces and all that. We'll get to it. But, you know, one thing that we should mention here, and we just because I feel like it would be ashamed to not even mention some of these guys' names, but there's a part of the Motorsports Hall of Fame, of course, and involves funny car racers or drag racers. And you'll find that when you look at the entries for this, now drag racing or top fuel drag racing or however it's broken down, I don't remember, but if you look at the different Motorsports Hall of Fame members, maybe do a search for funny car, you'll find that a lot of them were also involved with top fuel dragsters.
Oh, yeah.
So funny car and top fuel dragsters are kind of synonymous in that way, and that a lot of the drivers are the same, but maybe their focus was on top fuel dragsters towards the end of their career, and that's where they actually got most of their victories, but they started out in funny car, or vice versa.
Right. So a lot of crossover.
Yeah, so you'll find names like Dale Armstrong or Kenny Bernstein or even John Force. He's, of course, a funny car owner as well. Don Nicholson, or here's the one that surprised me, Danny Ungaius. Now, I forgot Danny Ungaius. He's a big IndyCar guy.
Right.
But he was in a lot of other series as well, but he was part of Mickey Thompson's team back in the late 60s and early 1970s, as we talked about in the Mickey Thompson podcast.
Oh, yep. You spoke the name, which means we have to go back to Mickey Thompson.
Yeah, we will, and after two more names, because I want to mention Don the Snake Prudhomme. That's where I got Noel's nickname.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
He was also an owner driver. And then there's, of course, Sox and Martin, Ronnie Sox and Buddy Martin. So famous drag racing team. But the list goes on and on. There's a lot of top fuel funny car drivers that made it into the Motorsports Hall of Fame with good reason. And you said we need to talk about Mickey Thompson a bit here too.
Yeah. So before we went on the air, Scott, we were talking about the various innovations that Mickey Thompson has, which we won't go into too much detail about in this episode because we have, and I'll be honest with you, we have a pretty good episode on Mickey Thompson.
I think we do. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's pretty good.
It was a fun one to record. It was really fascinating to research that.
Yeah, and we talk about the various weird mad science innovations that he created. So
also a good true crime story.
Also, a fascinating true crime story, which kind of snuck up on us.
I didn't mean to throw that in there, but I had to.
Yeah, we had to. That was sometimes when you're looking into these stories in the course of your research, you find the most surprising things. You know, Mickey Thompson does some legendary redesigns, right, of funny cars. Mm-hmm. So it's strange how so many of these big names in racing come about in multiple aspects of racing.
Yeah, you know? Sure. They intersect in some way. So, like, you're reading about Mickey Thompson, and then you'll come across Danny Ungaius. Mm-hmm. And then you start researching about Danny Ungaius, and you'll find out his IndyCar history and when he was there and who was racing. And then you'll run across another name that's of interest, and you'll start researching that. And that's how these podcasts seem to grow into bigger things than we initially intend. Happens a lot to us, doesn't it?
It does. It does happen a lot.
You know, one quick thing, and I keep saying that one quick thing. There's one more thing or one more thing I want to mention. A while back when I talked about often when I worked with Chrysler, I was doing the service training.
Uh-huh.
And one of the characters that I was involved with, and I call him character in a loving way, I guess.
A complimentary way.
A complimentary way. That's a better way to say it. One of the guys that I came across was Bobby Martin. Now, Bobby Martin was a driver and owner of a top alcohol funny car. I would love to talk to this guy because he had great racing stories. He was traveling. I mean, this guy traveling in his big, you know, Dodge Ram Cummins diesel, all around with a big trailer on the back that was, promoted by Chrysler Corporation. It was a program. It was like an apprenticeship program for Chrysler technicians. First, it was called the Chrysler Apprenticeship Program. Then it was changed to the College Automotive Program, which is what it was called when I was there. Mm-hmm. And then now it's like the Mopar College Automotive Program, and then the Career Automotive Program. It's like it changes names. It's one of those acronyms that they change to fit the acronym that's already there.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what they call it. It's retro something. But this guy was so fascinating to talk to, and I don't think that he's driving anymore. I can't confirm that. But he would sometimes show up to the training facility that we were at with his trailer that was all painted up, you know, for the CAT program.
Yeah.
And his truck. And when I was doing the training, he would write in with articles, like monthly articles for the newsletter that I put together for the service technicians. And he would have these interesting stories about being on the road and what it's like to drive and everything. And I think this is where I got this description from. And it was either him or there was another Chrysler drag racer who raced a Top Fuel dragster, but I didn't have much contact with him. I interviewed him a few times. His name was Mike Dunn, and he drove one of those 25-foot-long, you know, enormous, you know, the 12,000 horsepower, whatever those things are. It's a crazy amount. He was one of those two guys is the one that gave me the description of what it's like when you hit the throttle on the line, you know, when the green light comes up.
And you hit that 6G.
They said that this is exactly what it feels like. And I can't remember if it's Bobby or Mike, but they said when you're sitting at the line, and you've got you're pressed back as hard as you can in the seat, and you got your head back and everything, and you got the Hans device on and all that, and you're strapped in. They said it feels as if a semi has just hit you from a dead stop going 100 miles an hour. It's like that's what it feels like. It's like that amount of force on your back and your body when that thing accelerates. That's how it's a brutal, brutal sport. I mean, it's taxing on your body in every way. And I heard another thing, and I want to say, and this is something just recollection from reading somewhere, but there have been Top Fuel dragsters that have started to lose their vision at the end of their career because when they get to the end of the run and they hit the chutes, you know, to slow them down, you know, not mechanical brakes aren't doing anything at this point, but the chutes, when those chutes deploy, there's negative G's that are applied to your body as well. And it's actually pulling your eyeballs out of the sockets a little bit. It's detaching your retinas.
Wow.
And towards the end of the career, that has like a progressive effect on your vision, and it becomes worse and worse and worse as you age, and you do run after run after run. I think it was Big Daddy Don Garlitz that had said something like that his vision was failing as a result of that. I'm pretty sure. It was a big name. I don't know if it's Bernstein or who it was, but
I mean, if we're being honest, the human body is not built to regularly be subjected to such forces.
No, it's incredible.
I don't know if we had mentioned this yet. What they're hitting is the equivalent of 6 G's, 6 times more than Earth's gravity.
Yeah, and that's at launch, and that's at launch. That's an instant 6 G's. So I don't even know how to describe. I mean, that's probably the best description I've ever heard. Was
hit by a semi
in the back end. At, you know, you're parked. They're going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It's just got to be brutal. It's got to be something that your body just can't put up with for that long. That's why I'm kind of thinking that maybe Bobby isn't driving anymore. I did see on his website, there's a website for Bobby Martin. I don't remember exactly what it is. I think it's like Bobby Martin Racing or something like that. He's now a motivational speaker, which makes perfect sense because the guy, his stories, the stuff that he wrote for us was so well done. It was clever in a lot of ways, but, it was almost like his own little narrative. Like he had his own, season long story going. And I really appreciated reading his stuff. It was always fun, but, there's so much more to cover here, Ben. How about, have we just said you can go to NHRA.com? I don't think we've said that.
NHRA.com is a great website for, I don't know, the various beginning questions you might have about funny cars. I will tell you that one of my favorite facts, which listeners, a lot of you saw coming, was the cost of fuel. So, the nitromethane used to power the engines on the top fuel dragsters and funny cars cost about 16 per gallon. If we consider that a lot of these have, what, an 18-gallon tank, then what we're looking at is $288 to fill the tank.
Yeah.
Which doesn't sound like that much until you realize that every time they do one competition, They're taking out, what, 16? How many gallons?
18, I think you said, right?
It's 18 for the tank.
For the tank, sure.
Yeah. And then they're...
Oh, I'm sorry. They said the run and everything, they can burn up to 15 or 16, I think it was. So you're right. They have just a tiny bit of reserve, and I would guess that's in case something happens during staging, maybe, that delays them a bit.
Right.
Or, you know, whatever happens. Maybe
they're
left
idling. It's a close
idling.
Margin, especially with such a thirsty engine.
And, you know, another quick thing. I keep remembering all these little things. They don't really have any kind of a cooling system. The way that the engine is designed, and you would never think this, the engine has no water jackets at all. So it's basically, it's an air-cooled engine. And yeah. You would never guess that. So these things don't want to sit in idle for too long, of course. The one thing that they do have going for them is that the methanol and the fuel, coupled with the idea that these things are only going to run for maybe 2 minutes at a time at the most, you know, when they start from startup to finish, two or 3 minutes maybe, is that it's so short that they really don't need any type of water cooling to happen as well. And it seems like it's just another system breakdown, really. So it's probably a smart move on their part not to include water jackets in these things, but you would just never guess that type of thing. Well, of course, another thing we should mention, single camshafts are allowed only. There's no dual cams allowed in the series at all. And there's really only two different types of bore and stroke combinations that are run by anyone in the series. And one is called a 3/4 stroker, and the other one's called a 5/8 stroker. And one of them, the 3/4 stroker, has a smaller bore and a longer stroke. The 5/8 stroker has a longer bore and a shorter stroke. And I think it should be pointed out that the 3/4 stroker is the most common combination used today. And it equals somewhere around, so out of that 426 engine, they're getting right around 496 cubic inches out of it. So it's extending that to about 8.1 liters in size off from that 426 mm-hmm. engine. And I don't know what 426 breaks down to in liters. But I think a 440 is 7.2. And again, all those are based on that 426 Hemi engine, the elephant engine.
The elephant engine.
Yeah, the racing engine, the aluminum Hemi engine, I guess.
There's one thing I want to go back to.
What's that?
I want to go back to the people. I don't want to derail us, but I feel like we should spend a little bit of time on John Force.
Oh, how could we not?
Right?
Yeah, the guy, I mean, his name is synonymous with funny car racing at this point.
So John Force is a 16-time funny car champion driver, 18-time champion car owner.
Yeah, that's right, because he had other drivers, right?
Right. And across his career, he's had 143 victories. This guy, if you look at the list of funny car champions, his name by far dominates.
Yeah, so 143 victories. You're talking about event wins. So, like, right. You know, if there's a racing weekend at Pomona, he wins the weekend. That's what we mean by an event win. He's done that 143 times. This guy is a legendary status, of course.
And he's still in the game.
Yeah, the round wins are in the thousands, or at least above 1,000 anyways. I mean, he's won a lot of races. And of course, he's got family in it now. His daughter's racing. If you look at the list of champions, his name is in there from what, 1991 all the way through, 2013, I believe, as a champion. Uh-huh. And then you said, you know, of course, Tony Pedregon in 2003 and Robert Height in 2009, each won a title while on his team. So that accounts for the extra two. So that's the 18 championships, really. And not only that, his former crew chief, the guy's name is Austin Coyle. He's, of course, you know, he's been with him from the beginning. So he's logged the highest number of wins as crew chief as well. So these guys are record breakers in just about every aspect of the sport.
Yeah. It's amazing. This is one of the highest performing driver.
And the thing, you know, we're not looking at numbers back from like the Mickey Thompson era, you know, like back in the late '60s and 1970s. These are numbers that John Force's, domination of the series began around 1991 or 1990, I guess. I think I misspoke earlier. It's 1990 when he started his winning. But if you go back, you know, you get names like, Cheryl Greer and Don Prudhomme and, Raymond Beadle and guys like that, like Frank Hawley. So you're going to see a lot of different names on the list. But then after you get after, 1990, that's when, Force really dominates this whole list.
Right.
And, yeah. this is a silly one. Yeah. And this is one for the over 18 crowd maybe to look at online, but, there was a duo that raced in funny cars for a while that I think we should just mention, and I'll leave it at that. I won't go too much farther into this, I promise, but, there was a duo named, Jungle Jim and Jungle Pam. And, anybody that was from that era will recognize those names right away. And, his real name wasn't Jungle Jim, of course. It was Jim Lieberman. And Jim Lieberman and a woman named, her nickname was Jungle, but Jungle Pam Hardy. She was an 18-year-old, that kind of traveled with him, I guess. We'll put it that way.
Uh-huh.
She would appear on the track with him in these really skimpy outfits. And her main thing, or her main focus at the event, was to not only draw media attention, of course. I mean, that was what this was all about. But after he would do the burnout, she would be out, you know, front and center on the track, and she would guide him back to the starting line, you know, back to stage.
Yeah.
And that's an important thing to do, of course. You know, they can't really see behind them, so you have to guide them back. But she would wear these really skimpy outfits, and she would pose in very provocative ways for the photographers. And we'll just leave it at that. So you may want to look that up if you have a few spare moments anyways. And, you know, we can't discount, you know, the guys that were more about just the racing and what they did, you know, like the Mickey Thompsons of the thing and the Don Prudhomes and the Sox and Martins and the factory teams that raced as well, because they were all part of this and keeping the whole thing going. And during that era, or maybe just prior to that era, there's something that unusual that happened that I think we should mention too. We talked about this on a Nuts and Bolts episode a long time ago, and I think that it came from one that was called One More Thing back in June of 2014. So it wasn't that long ago, and I'll only briefly mention it. There was something called the Chicago Indoor Drag Racing Events that happened in 1962, 1963, and 1964. And it's just as crazy as it sounds. They raced in some of these old stockyard warehouses, really. You know, the Chicago stockyards.
Uh-huh.
They had these great big enormous warehouses that somebody decided in the off season they could drag race cars inside. It's a terrible idea for a lot of reasons, but it's also pretty cool to think about them doing it. And terribly dangerous, you know, because the concrete floors, they look like they're glass. They're very, very slick. A lot of times, you know, at the end of the run, the drivers would have to kind of thread the needle through a doorway, which led to the outside of the building. And some of them didn't make it through that doorway. I don't think there were any fatalities here. I mean, after all, Ben, they had hay bales there for safety. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, hay bales, you know.
Right. Yeah.
What's that going to do?
Not too much.
It was really amazing. And of course, exhaust gases collected in the building. It was a bad idea for spectators and the people participating. But, you know, a big promoter, I think, you know, the guy, I don't remember the guy's name, but he drew in some of the big names of the day, some of the big drag racers in the Sportsman series. And they actually raced in these, you know, like 330 or 440 foot length races that happened indoors in the early 1960s. I'd be interested. I don't think anything could happen like that today, but I'd be interested to see something like that today.
It was Bill Shade, right? That was the promoter.
Could be. Yeah. I was looking at some of the names that he drew, and I was getting that confused with the actual racers like Arnie Beswick and some of the other big names that were racing at the time. But good for a lot of reasons, bad for a lot of reasons.
I don't think you could do it indoor today unless someone invented either something to instantly disperse the emissions or some kind of non-IC engine. Like, I don't know what it would be. I can't conceive of an electric engine that, or an electric motor that would be able to come anywhere near competing with the funny car.
I wouldn't say that. I bet you somebody's going to come up with an example because, instant torque, you know, it's going to be fast.
Sure. Yeah. It's going to have the torque, but.
You're right though, to compete with an 8,000 horsepower machine.
Yeah.
That's going to be a serious, electric motor.
I don't know. I just don't know an example. I'm going to try to find one.
I'm well aware that, you know, electric cars can compete with some of the other series, of course.
Absolutely.
You know, they can win drag races easily. A lot of them can.
Yeah.
But to compete against an actual, nitromethane burning funny car, I don't know.
We have yet to see that. We have yet to see it.
That's maybe better.
But if that happened, then we could see the return of indoor drag racing.
Maybe. I'd say at best. What if you had a drag racing venue that was that had a roof that could open or close so that if it was raining they could run the event? That might be a good idea, like a very, very high roof, you know, like a long narrow building, that was open on either end, so that it's raining outside and, you know, in the pit area and everything. But once you got into that that staging area and the shutdown area, you're completely covered, so that the track always remains dry. I wonder if that would work, but you'd have to find a way to completely dry the tires too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if it would work or not.
But if we can figure this out, Scott, then finally people will be able to have that adventure I assume they're looking for.
That's a $10,000 idea right there. Not $1 million idea.
It's not $1 million idea. Doesn't top some of our other ideas.
Patent pending. Copyright. Whatever we need to say.
Yeah, right. I think it counts if you say it on air.
I think it does. Yeah, right.
So where else are we going with
this? All right. Well, about the only thing I've got left, and I'm sure that there's more for me to cover here in far too great a detail.
I mean, you brought Jungle Jim back.
you know, the people that look that up will be happy they did. All right, so maybe.
I think so.
Others might be a little bit sad, but I think the NHRA Fun Facts is where we'll go, because this is right from the NHRA site, and this is one of the kind of fun things that, you know, the NHRA.com site does, aside from, you know, having the schedules for next year and, you know, the point standings and driver profiles, team profiles, tickets, all that stuff. They have the section that's called Fun Facts, and I just love looking through this. And now I know we've probably read these online, maybe early on in this podcast, maybe even when you're high-speed stuff, we did this. And looking at these numbers, I don't think they've changed them much. I don't think there's been much update to this. Mm-hmm. So I think that these maybe are a little bit behind the times, but not much. This is pretty close. All right, so the numbers might be a few years off, but we'll give them some kind of leeway on this. That they're still pretty fascinating, and the ones that I want to focus on here, and there's a lot more than what I'm going to read, but it's kind of a did you know section. And most of the ones that pertain to Top Fuel dragsters are the same for the funny cars. So they'll say Top Fuel dragsters and funny cars do this. I'm going to leave out the Top Fuel dragsters part and just read it as funny cars just for this episode.
Yeah.
All right. So, not in any particular order here. And I'll just read a few.
I'll jump in on a few, too.
So kind of a did-you-know thing. So did you know that the nitromethane-powered engines of NHRA funny cars produce approximately 7,000 horsepower? See, we're off already. 8,000 horsepower is what it is. About 37 times that of the average street car.
Right.
37 times.
Or remember how I said they're like 5 to 6 Gs when you launch?
Yeah.
Did you know that a funny car is slowed by reverse force more than 7 times that of gravity when both parachutes deploy at once?
That's exactly what we're talking about, the retinas detaching, remember?
Yep.
All right, so here's another one. Did you know that one cylinder of the 8 cylinders of a funny car produces 750 horsepower, equaling the entire horsepower output of a NASCAR engine? So that's one cylinder is equivalent to an entire NASCAR engine output.
Yeah.
Impressive.
It's impressive, and it puts it in perspective, those kind of comparisons. Like Top Fuel dragsters accelerate faster than a jumbo jet, a Formula One car, and a fighter jet.
All right, Ben, remember how I said that all these don't quite stand up to the test of time, you know, that some of them have changed? Well, they initially had reported that it was, you know, the acceleration speed and comparing it to a Porsche 911 turbo. Well, that's dramatically changed over the years. So I've kind of updated this one. Okay. So they said that the NHRA Top Fuel funny car accelerates from 0 to 100 in less than 0.8 seconds, which is probably still true. But they said that that's almost 11 seconds quicker than it takes a production Porsche 911 turbo to reach the same speed. That's not true anymore, because a Porsche 911 turbo now accelerates from 0 to 100 in just 6.8 seconds. So I don't think that's true anymore. I think that's dramatically, because they were saying 11 seconds quicker than that Now it'll do it in 6.8 seconds. So the, I guess the real answer would be 5.9 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Something in that ballpark.
Yeah, something like that.
So it's, yeah, it's strange when we just think about, again, I can't get over
the fuel.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fuel numbers are just incredible. So, funny cars consume between 4 and 5 gallons of fuel during a quarter mile run. Just the quarter mile part, not the, the whole thing as we talked about before, which is like 15 gallons or whatever. But just that quarter mile run, that's the equivalent to getting somewhere between 16 and 20 gallons per mile. So it's like the reverse. It's not like miles per gallon. It's gallons per mile. It's 16 to 20 gallons per mile. It's incredible.
Stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. So when you think about the distance that they travel the length of more than 4 football fields in less than 5 seconds. You got to keep your eyes open the whole time. There's no way you could blink during that
right.
run.
In just 660 feet, they exceed 280 miles per hour, according to this. But I'm thinking, Scott, that's something that needs to be updated as well.
I think so. You know, this list, I don't know if it's such a great list anymore. I'm going to have to call the NHRA. I'll call the NRA and talk to them about the NHRA.
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to call both and I'm going to raise some hell. No, I'm going to call the NHRA and say they need to update this site because we're getting some old numbers here, but you get the general feel for this whole thing.
Right.
And the other, back to the fuel, I guess, because I'm just fascinated by the fuel stats on this. The fuel pump for a funny car delivers 65 gallons of fuel per minute, which is the equivalent to 8 bathroom showers running at the same time. That's incredible. I mean, turn on your bathroom shower. Look at how much water's coming out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Then think about 8 of those running at one time, and that's just the fuel. Now consider that being mixed with greater amounts of air and being taken into the engine. And that's happening, what, every minute, did I say? Yeah, 65 gallons of fuel
right.
per minute are consumed in these cars.
That's astounding and strange.
It really is. I mean, that's at top speed. And, of course, the reason that, you know, that number is so high, and if you think about this, is because that quarter mile run where they're burning most of their fuel, it only takes like 4 seconds. That's mm-hmm. why they can do that. They can't run for a full minute at that speed because they'd have to have a 65 gallon fuel tank.
Mm-hmm.
So all the numbers make sense. It's just
right,
how you got to segment this run into what they're burning.
Right. Then these numbers are extrapolated out. Right?
Exactly right.
Because can you imagine how much fuel it would take to get one of these, just in a hypothetical world, as a daily driver?
Oh, God, yeah. Can you imagine if you were to try to get to, do your daily commute and figure out what that would cost you if you're burning 65 gallons of fuel per minute?
And remember to make space for a little over 2,000 feet so you can stop at lights.
Well, of course, you know, instead of taking an hour and 45 minutes to get here to the office every day, though, I would probably get here in about 35 seconds.
Yeah, give or take. Give or take.
Yeah. If only there was like a wide open road like that where you could run like that. That would be so fantastic.
I think about that all the time, Scott.
We're talking about like the Tesla Hyperloop speeds.
Yeah, yeah. Which there's a little bit of news about the Tesla Hyperloop too, which we will have to get to in another episode. Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to mosey on down the road today.
I know we really hyped that list. Like, we were going to talk about the fun facts and everything, but when I look at this list now and I read through it, I think, like, you know, in the past 4 or 5 years, there have been so many advancements and so many increases in these numbers. The numbers have got to be even more staggering than they are in this list that we've reported.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They've got to be even bigger and better.
So I'm going to look at it, and I'll make this deal with you listeners. I'm going to come back, maybe not next episode, but in a few episodes, and check out an updated version of this list.
Oh, that's a great idea. Fantastic idea. And I'll call the NRA and see what they can do about it.
Right, yeah.
See how much control they have over the NHRA.
And I'll call NASA, just since we're doing things that start with N, and see what their opinion of it is.
That's a fantastic idea, Ben.
Yeah,
Why not?
You never know.
They've got their hands in everything.
Don't bring out my conspiratorial side.
I was trying to.
All right, well, before I go full tinfoil hat, Scott and I are going to get out of here. If you want to check out our other podcasts on racing, we have quite a few. They are at carstuffshow.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, where we are CarStuffHSW. And if you want to send an email directly to us, we'd love to hear it, because our best suggestions come from you. Our email address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
More on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.